This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Hello and good morning. Welcome to the Morning Run on BFM 89.9, The Business Station. I'm Melissa Idris and I've got with me
Tan Chung Han.
Good morning, Han. How's it going?
I'm all right. Yourself?
Not too bad. 6 o'clock, Wednesday, the 28th of October. And the reason why I'm not too bad is because I'm thinking about maybe making my bid or putting my bid in for the equanimity. Because today is the last day for the auction of equanimity. Of course, that's the super yacht once owned by the fugitive businessman Joe Lo. He used it to host parties with Miranda Kerr and Paris Hilton. And, you know, there's a helipad for my chopper to land, should I need it to.
All right, Mel, just a reminder, if you are successful in your bid, you cannot let it sit idly for too long. You got to take it up to Langkawi and back once in a while just to make sure that it's all running. You know that they had to take the equanimity up to Langkawi recently, right?
Why? So it cannot sit. It cannot be moored. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's interesting.
Well, at least that's what the Prime Minister said.
Well, there's been 3.5 million ringgit already spent on equanimity in terms of maintenance. So there you go. I can just take it, zip back home to Penang for a quick visit, some nasi kandar, and then come back.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
There you go.
Well, you know, so as long as you've got some $1 million that you can plunk down on these, this is according to the story in the Edge Financial Daily, some of these potential buyers have already had to stump up some $1 million.
So, on WhatsApp has said it's November because I accidentally said October. I said the 28th of October. Oh. Well, it's the 28th of November. Thank you. You're absolutely right. And I love that you're weighing in already. 018-789-8899 is the number to get in touch with us this morning. Or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. We want to hear from you. We've got lots of conversation coming your way, including in this hour, a look at anti-aging.
All right. So, I know I've got really, really youthful looks. Too bad this is radio.
You've got a baby face.
Yeah, I know. I've got this whole facial regime thing going on, right? So I've heard of mud facials and using fruits and what have you, right? I've heard of this thing about, perhaps using some foreskin. And I don't know if foreskin facial is a thing. Well, we can consider that, later on in the show.
It's the latest trend in skincare, Han. Yeah. And we're also going to be looking at the environment. Now, we all say we care about the environment, but how many of us would go so far as to give up some of our comfort for it? So in this hour, we're going to be looking at ways to make lasting changes to the way we treat the environment.
That's right. Also, now this hour, we'll consider what kind of stories or headlines on your social media feed would actually make you click on it to read it, or as many of us do, just read the headline and just click share, right? I'm willing to bet, the warm, fuzzy stuff only goes so far, but ultimately, bad news sells. We'll consider the dynamics of what makes a news value or a news valuable in just a bit.
All right. All those news coming your way in the next hour. And after this, we're going to kick it off with, has anti-aging finally gone too far? Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on Wednesday, the 28th of November. Melissa and Han here with you. That was U2 with Mysterious Ways. I love U2, one of my favorite bands there. Now, we're talking about anti-aging this morning. The latest in anti-aging skincare trends is the foreskin facial. Now, before you get all grossed out about that, this is what it is. It's a serum cloned from. So it's not the actual foreskin. It's a serum cloned from the circumcised foreskins of South Korean babies, which you rub all over your face to take off the ears. Now, it's called the epidermal growth factor, EFG serum, and it's derived from the progenitor cells of the human fibroblast taken from the foreskins of newborn babies, and it helps generate collagen and elastin, which can help boost the radiance of your face.
Yeah. So I'm reading this article on TheGuardian.com, and they're throwing about celebrity names like Kate Beckinsale, mm-hmm. you know, and justifying this new trend here when it comes to facials. But then the headline of the article also asks, does this mark the end of the world? Look, I must say, you kind of lost me at foreskin.
Okay, it's gross. I think the question we're asking this morning, but it's not actually, so it's actually just a serum cloned from that. Right, it's just using the cells. Now, I think that the question we're asking this morning is, what is the price of youth to you, right? Mm. How far would you go to preserve your youth and, you know, take that anti-aging skincare regime? Like, for me, it didn't become a real issue until I hit a certain age, and that age is 35. And then I thought, okay, well, you know what? I'm starting to see some changes in my, you know, my body and my skin, and I think I may be a little late to the game, but that's all right. What really struck me with this, Han, is that not only does it feel very, I don't know, out there, right? But also, there's a 2-year waiting list for this foreskin facial. Mm. And for the serum to take effect, you have to microneedle your face. Mm. So you have to stick little needles in your face for the serum to be injected into it.
Yeah, look, obviously the caveat here would be, you know, I'm speaking here as a male, and I totally recognize the tremendous amount of pressure that society places on you women to make sure you have those youthful looks. There is a totally double standard when
how dare you?
I know. Like, totally double standard when it comes to judging men and their appearance versus women. I totally get that. I can't say it. I know what it feels like, but I can, you know, sympathize and empathize here. But, you know, like, coming back to this treatment and how far you'd go, right? I mean, like, it obviously seems to be drawing this very, very thick line between the haves and the have-nots. You know, obviously, those who can afford everything under the sun to make sure they try and preserve their youthful looks, you know, they'll go for it, be it placenta or, you know, as this story says, the cloned cells from babies' foreskins.
A single treatment of this foreskin facial costs almost £500.
There we go.
That is very, very expensive. Mm-hmm. And I have to tell you, though, you know, this got me thinking to quite a number of things. Not too long ago, my friend was trying to turn me on to horse placenta pills, she claimed was the secret to her everlasting youth. And she looks good for her age, but I didn't buy into it. And I was wondering, you know, I mean, does that not just turn you off? The name of it already just feels like, oh, I'm not going to put that in. I'm not going to swallow that.
What is it
for men? Is it skin? Or is it hair?
It's a hair.
It's hair, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, you hear some of these commercials on other radio stations, and firstly, how dare you listen to anything else but BFM 89.9. You know, but you hear these commercials like, oh, call now and you can, you know, get your hair growth treatment thing started. And if I may be totally vulnerable, I actually signed up for one of those treatments not long ago because my former employer actually paid for it, and, you know, TV, you know, so you got to at least try to preserve some of it.
They wouldn't pay for the foreskin facial?
Well, no, but they did pay for facials. And I mean, it's not really my thing, and I just went there for a free nap, basically. You know, it was a nice nap.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. But, you know, so again, I understand as a guy saying these things and being rather flippant about it, I understand because there's, you know, so much less pressure when it comes to men maintaining our youthful looks versus women.
I have to say, though, I don't think that... For me, I don't believe facials work, to be honest with you. I know there's a lot of people who will swear by them, but I personally don't. I think what it does is that self-pampering makes you feel good, and therefore it reflects that on the outside because you feel good inside.
So it's almost like a placebo effect.
Well, I think self-care, self-pampering is always very good. It makes you feel rested and good and like you're taken care of. And then that shows in your skin and your demeanor and your behavior, and that makes you look youthful.
Well, Mel, you don't look a day over 25.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Fantastic. All right. You know, we're going to be looking at what we can do to leave a better world for our children next. But I guess, you know, this is kind of coming back to the idea of how far you would go to live forever and preserve your youth versus, you know, what you would do to leave a better world for your children. So we're going to be looking at that in just a couple minutes. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9. 6:20 right now. Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. The bees. Love is in the harbour there. Melissa and Han keeping you company this morning, and hello to Joe and Lee from who's listening in from Toulouse in France.
That's right. So it's 11:20 p.m. over in France right now. So yes, good evening to you.
Oh, a bit late, but thank you so much for joining us this morning. Now you too can tweet in like Joan. Our Twitter handle's at BFM Radio, and our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899. Now, some troubling news this morning. I woke up to news on the BBC, which reported on a new emissions gap report by the UN. So this report shows that there's been a rise in CO2 emissions for the first time in 4 years. Mm. Now, it shows that global efforts to tackle climate change are really off track. So it's not just that efforts to tackle climate change has gone off track. So we said we were going to cut carbon emissions. That has faltered. But we also have registered higher emissions output because of the rise of economic growth in 2017. Mm-hmm. So not only are we putting up more, we're not doing enough to cut back.
That's right. So this actually was the theme of a conference that I was at yesterday, or a forum. It was the 8th National Energy Forum. It was put on by Malaysia Gas, the Malaysian Gas Association, also the Energy Commission, right? And we actually discussed those dynamics, right? The global context versus, you know, localizing it. Mm-hmm. And when you see these numbers out there, so we had Ali Salman, who's the CEO of Ideas, the think tank, you know, he was on that panel, and he spoke about how, you know, there's this worldview out there that even if, let's say, all the signatories of the Paris Agreement were to fully implement what was laid out in the agreement, it would only reduce the global temperature by less than 0.2 degrees Celsius. So I know whether or not we're actually reacting to something that's sustainable, or are we perhaps exaggerating some of those fears, you know?
But exaggerating, really?
Yeah, no, so that's the viewpoint that he put forth, and this was something that kind of generated a bit of discussion within the forum there, mm-hmm. right? So when you see these kind of headlines coming out of the BBC, also, you know, several other media outlets, you know, it makes you wonder really, you know, what is it that is contributing to this disconnect between the ambition and the will to, you know, get the world to either a carbon neutral status or, you know, something that significantly reduces greenhouse gases versus where we are now and the inertia when it comes to changing mindsets and habits.
Well, I think it boils down to that, to a very simple kind of pedestrian level, right? Mm-hmm. We are not willing to change. And I say we, myself included, that I'm not willing to give up my air conditioning and my modern comforts, right, that we're so used to in urban life. I have to say, though, that got me thinking about what it would take to make a lasting change in my behavior. So whenever my behavior changes, it's always very short term. So after I watch a Leonardo DiCaprio documentary, and then it changes for about a week. Whenever there's been a campaign about plastic straws, then it changes for another week. And a campaign for no plastic bags, and I carry my own green bags for one time to the grocery store. So what would it take for me to make a lasting change? And I wonder whether it needs to be that, to be a constant reminder of the campaigns, or should I just pick one cause and stick with it? If plastic straws is going to be my cause, then I will fight for plastic straws, against plastic straws, from now until kingdom come, until no one else uses straws.
Right. Well, it's got to be broad-based, right? Because straw, if you become this Uber campaigner for the...
like an eco-warrior.
Yeah, eco-warrior, you know, but only for plastic straws, you know, at the expense of, yeah, I'll do open burning, sure. You know, then it just doesn't justify itself, right?
You reckon?
I mean,
wouldn't this kind of like one consistent cause be better than a piecemeal change in behavior the way I've been doing it? So I'm wondering, you know, I think that if I was going to make a contribution to my efforts to preserve the environment, then pick one thing and stick with it.
Yeah, well, but it's got to be holistic, right? Because, you know, again, just drawing that oversimplified comparison, right? If let's say you're all for the abolishment of plastic straws, but you're okay with throwing cigarette butts out your window, then it just doesn't work. check out. So it's got to be holistic. And as being holistic also requires enough buy-in from all these stakeholders. Though. I'm talking policymakers. I'm talking, you know, what happens at the home, within the home, within formal education. So the list goes on and on. Industry players, of course. So everybody has got to play a part here. Now, obviously, that is easier said than done. And ultimately, I think the economics of it also is a big driving point.
You reckon a tax might help?
Well, see, now this is a discussion that's happening all around the world. Just this past weekend, there were riots in Paris, right?
That's right.
And one of the things they were pushing back on was this tax on fossil fuels. They're saying, well, you know, it's hurting our pockets. So they're pushing back against Macron's attempt to tax these fossil fuels. That same discussion happened this past weekend in Victoria State, where they had the state elections.
Energy. In Australia.
Yeah, in Australia. Energy was another hot topic for them as well, right? So, you know, here in Malaysia, I don't think we're even quite there yet. We're still trying to create awareness that, hey, you, your lifestyle, your daily economic activities actually has a carbon footprint.
Yeah, so I think we can't do much about policy and we can't do much about commercial or industrial behavior, right? But I think we can do something about the way we change or the way we, I guess, consume or put out emissions. Mm. Now, I don't know whether I agree with you, Han, about that we must do everything all at once, because that doesn't seem realistic. I don't think I could do that. I don't think I could change my entire lifestyle and become a zero waste person with zero emissions or low emissions. But I can change some behaviors. And I think that as long as I change some behaviors consistently, and the question is, what would it take for me to do that beyond just the kind of a short term, you know, I watched the Before the Flood documentary by Leonardo DiCaprio, and then I stopped eating beef for a week because of the carbon emissions, the methane emissions that come from cattle farming. But then how do I make sure that that's a lasting, behavioral change? Would tax be the way to do it? Well, if I'm taxed, would I then think twice think twice about using that much electricity or, you know, things that are harmful to the environment?
Yeah, look, so my original point was making sure that it's more broad based than just, you know, changing one solid behavior for a long period of time. I tried to make it as broad based as possible. Now, one of the things that I gathered from yesterday's forum as well as, and to address your concern, right, about how do I make it sustainable? I mean, ultimately, it's got to be a lifestyle change. You know, sure, policy plays a role, you know, taxation or all that good stuff. But then at the end of the day, if it's not sustainable and reinforced by the various social agents that are near to you, I'm talking family, parents, peers, then it's only going to go so far.
Well, you can be the social agent then to influence other people, right? Okay, we've got the 6:30 news bulletin coming up next, but I want to say to Azmir Yusri, who has messaged in this morning on WhatsApp asking the frequency of BFM in Malacca and Johor. We don't have a frequency there yet, but you can always listen to us on our BFM app, which you can download from the Apple App Store or Google Play. Serena Magdalene poised at the mic to bring you the news headlines next on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. It's 40 minutes past 6 o'clock. You're listening to The Morning Run. Melissa and Han here with you this morning. That was The Pretenders there with Talk of the Town. And we're talking about what the town is talking about, essentially, this morning. Lots of things coming in from the newspapers. And I think the large focus has been what's happening with the temple there in Subang Jaya. We're going to be talking about that within the next hour or so. But something else, I mean, in terms of when we read all these news headlines, Han, it's what catches our attention, right? Mm-hmm. So when it's sensational, when it's clickbaity, that's the term that they use, when it feels like it's appealing to our emotions, then we immediately gravitate towards it. But the question is, would we do the same if it wasn't as sensational, if it was good news, essentially?
Mm. So the reason we're discussing this is because there was a recent quote that I want to mention from the Education Minister, Mazli Malekeya. He says this, and I quote, "In news writing, we cannot merely sensationalize negative news. I hope the media publishes 1,000 pieces of good news." So, which really got us thinking, right? Because so often, especially in recent weeks, you know, we have seen all these negative headlines that have come out, and our propensity to then share it, right? I've got concerned because I live in Subang, and I, you know, got concerned, people, you know, calling me and messaging me, making sure I'm okay, right? And so, there's a lot of fear mongering that's going on right now, at least in my opinion, mm-hmm. Because from where I live, you know, everything seems to be fine, even though it's just across the road from the hot zone, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, but broadly speaking, when we look at the kind of news pieces that infiltrate, if I may use that word, infiltrate our news feeds on social media, generally it's negative though. So why? Now you understand why if you take a journalism 101 class, and this was many, many, many moons ago, right? But remember, one of the seven or eight values that makes for a news story is actually the either the unusualness or conflict, yep. Right, is a very appealing narrative. And I think that's why we tend to gravitate more towards bad news than good news.
So I'll give you an example. If a dog bites a man, that's not news. If a man bites a dog, then that's news, right? Well, because it's an unusual and right. There's conflict. Mm. And, you know, the age-old saying, if it bleeds, it leads. Mm-hmm. And that's always on the front page. But I do agree with Mazli Malik, though. I mean, he was responding to some of the comments made out of that news about the canteen segregation. And he mentioned that, you know, look, this is one school. Granted, it's bad, right? It looks bad. But there are a lot of other schools who are working hard to encourage harmony and unity in their classrooms and outside of their classrooms. So why doesn't the media pick up on that? And I think Mazli Malik, having been the recipient of negative media coverage in the last 7 months or 6 months that he's been in office, I think this is hitting him. Yeah. This is a sore spot with him, to be fair, right? And I wonder whether there's a grain of truth in what he's saying. Mm. Are we, as the media, picking up on bad news? Because that's what media consumers want. Right.
Mm. Right. And I think that is indeed the case, right? Because if, let's say, it's some nice fluffy story about, oh, you know, look at this lovely, you know, group of puppies or litter of puppies. Okay, right. That's great. You know, but I don't think I'll get the same kind of traction as, say, you know, something that's really gory or dramatic or just plain old bad news, right? Unfortunately, that is the nature of the beast. And to reinforce that, I think, you know, journalists and upcoming journalists have also been conditioned to follow that same seven or eight news values, and that's how they frame their story.
Well, I don't think it's so much about journalism anymore, Han, because now everything's tracked, right, with data. Mm. So it depends on, so all newsrooms now have the kind of real-time tracking. How many people are clicking on this link? How many
that's
people
right.
are reading on this? How long are they spending on this page? So if you, as a news consumer, just click on a news article and then immediately go off it, that registers into the system, and then editors then know, oh, these types of stories, they don't really resonate with people. So it's a self-perpetuating cycle.
Exactly. And then they go for those keywords that really makes people click on it. And one of the things I remember from my college days was that, you know, no matter what the topic is, and this is according to the American Press Institute here, treatment trumps topic. And it's backed by research here. So treatment trumps topic. So even though the topic may be...
Treatment trumps topic.
That's right. So even though like the topic may not seem as edgy, right? It's how you frame it, and that's what gets eyeballs or clicks, you know. And unfortunately, that is the nature of the beast, right? And whether or not we in Malaysia, we have the capacity to actually break that cycle, I think that's the question.
Okay, I have to ask you though, have you ever seen a news headline and forwarded it or shared it without reading the article?
I have to be honest and say, yes, I have.
We all have.
Yeah,
we all have, right?
I'm not proud of it, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. And what made you want to share that?
Because of the sensational headline.
Okay, to be completely honest with you, I think the foreskin facial was something that I shared with you without reading as well. So I'm so guilty of that. Okay, we're going to come back and take a look at more interesting news in the headlines this morning. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. It's 10 minutes to 7 o'clock. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Melissa Idris with Tan Chung Han this morning. Cat Power there with The Greatest. Now, we were talking a little bit earlier this morning about how far you would go for anti-aging or to fight the effects of aging. And we were talking a little bit about the latest in anti-aging skincare trends, the foreskin facial. So we have here on Twitter, Michael weighing in, saying that you can't preserve anymore after the age of 45. There's no way to preserve anymore.
Well, tell that to Keanu Reeves, though. Like, you know, Keanu Reeves, there's this meme going on online, like how he seems to be, he never ages, right? He looks the same from...
Well, you need to use your facial muscles, which he doesn't when he acts.
Oh,
sorry. Okay. All right. We get in touch with us this morning at BFM Radio is our Twitter handle, or you can WhatsApp in 018-789-8899. Ramli Sirap on Twitter says, I don't care how good you look. If when someone says, wow, you look good, you have to reply, oh yeah, that's baby foreskin on my face. If you use the foreskin facial, I do want to say though, Ramli Sirap, this is not actual foreskin. It's cloned serum. So serum cloned from the epidermal growth factor from the progenitor cells of the human fibroblast. Not that I'm selling this. I'm not a believer. No, full disclaimer, this show was not sponsored by baby foreskin
facials. A cloned baby foreskin facials. Ugh. Yeah. But well, I guess what Romney's trying to say is, you know, just the thought of it is quite repulsive, right? And so the question we were considering was like, how far would you go to maintain your youthful looks?
What is the price of youth for you? Because apparently a single treatment of this costs £500. So there you go. We were also talking about whether good news can sell. This is after comments made by the education minister saying that, you know, media should highlight positive news regarding local schools instead of just focusing on the negative following that report on the school in Malacca with a separate canteen serving halal food. So he's saying, well, you know, if you highlight this one particular school, actually all over Malaysia, there are good schools. Why not highlight that? And we have a couple messages on Twitter.
We do?
We have Muzaffar Hisham, who says there must be more accessible avenues for... Oh, he's weighing in on the swimming, excuse me. He's weighing on swimming comments made by Mazli Malik on swimming. But it also, since we're talking about Mazli Malik Han this morning, did you see his Instagram post?
Apparently, it contained lyrics from a classic noughties song.
Numb by, is it Linkin Park?
Yeah.
You would know.
I know, right? And isn't it sad that we're starting to call naughty's songs classics? I mean, is
well,
it
no one does that but you.
No, really? Yeah. I mean, I think we can. It's already 2018. We're almost at 2020. We can start calling them classics.
That's true. But it also, I mean, you know, to see the Numb lyrics pasted or posted on Mazli Malik's Instagram post got us thinking as to the use of social media by politicians. And it ties in with a comment made by Rafizi Ramli about the former Prime Minister Najib Razak. So Rafizi Ramli has actually lauded Najib for his tech savviness. And he says that, well, Najib is more social media and tech savvy compared to most Malaysian politicians.
Mm. Well, I'm thinking that because he has got a team behind him who actually generates these posts either on Twitter or on Facebook.
You mean Najib?
Yeah, Najib, right? Well, many of these politicians do anyways, right? Because they obviously don't have time to come up with all these very well-crafted tweets or Facebook posts. But, you know, I have seen the going back and forth between the current finance minister against the former finance minister. I mean, it does make for some entertaining reading, but, you know, it does reach a limit, though. After a while, it kind of gets old, at least I think.
Well, okay, so I think, to be honest with you, right, you love him or hate him, I think Rafizi has a point about Najib, right? So again, love him or hate Najib, that is. He has a point. He's used social media and especially his Facebook posting in a very interesting way. Mm. And if you look at how many followers he has on Facebook, 3.5 million followers on Facebook, 4 million followers on Twitter, and 500,000 on Instagram. And this is quite interesting because what he's done is he's bypassed the need for media. So no longer does he have to wait for the media to report on a statement he makes. Mm. Now he's posting on social media, and what we see is that media pick up on that and
exactly.
then make it a news report. So
right.
I thought that's a brilliant way of using social media.
Yeah, you know, it shows the necessity of social media when it comes to any politician's public campaign or public communication campaign. Now, you know, obviously, we see that with Donald Trump and you know, all these world leaders, and obviously here in Malaysia as well, right? Now, whether or not all those followers are genuine followers or bots,
good point.
That's a different story.
But also on his Instagram is on about his cat, Kiki, yeah. which is, you know, a lighter side of him. I want to mention Paul Lau on Twitter, who said, after years of propaganda on news media, I've sometimes become numb to reporting of good news. There you go. Nice one there, Paul. All right, the 7 o'clock news bulletin is coming up next. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.